Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Nice to have you along. Ted Ross at the controls. Joe's at the phone today. Still working our way out of Carissa. Taking care of baby, and we'll be coming back here.
That's right. We got to see little Samuel last week, right?
That was kind of fun.
Yeah, very fun.
Enjoyed that a lot. So anyway, hope that she's doing well, and hope you're doing well. And of course, we're all just recovering a little bit after after a weekend of the football that wasn't necessarily
A little painful if you're a Viking fan like me.
Yeah, yeah.
But we move on.
I think that's what we're going to do. We're going to move on. So our guest coming up today has experienced some of the pain of we experienced in Philadelphia as well. I think I don't know if he's a Atlanta Hawks fan, but
Falcons.
Falcons. Yeah. So from Atlanta, they had a little trouble getting through the link as well.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
So we got something coming up here next month that we're excited about and want to just encourage you that you would join in with us on the Live Free Challenge. It's an initiative to support the work of International Justice Mission. If you're familiar with IJM, you know that they're all about freeing children, women, and men from human trafficking.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful organization. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, so important to be thinking about that, and sex slaves, child prostitution, trafficking, some of the most critical human rights issues of our time. More than 45 million children, women, and men are trapped in forced labor or sexual slavery. It's hard to even imagine those kind of numbers. And so our goal is to raise over $60,000 for International Justice Mission. The average cost of a rescue is about $6,300, which could bring freedom to many held in slavery today. Maybe it's a dozen people, maybe more. I mean, it could be hundreds, really, how that all works. And we'd love to see the means for 10 rescue operations to take place. So
that's right.
We're excited about that possibility. What we want you to do is just to this is a matter where you determine a goal, a fitness goal. Where you're walking, running, or biking, or swimming, or whatever it is that you'd like to do, and you go online, sign up, and you can find some friends that will support you in your efforts, or they can join in as well, and then together we can see some funds raised. We put our best efforts forward toward the world's greatest needs. That's really what this is all about. And you go to livefreechallenge.org to find out more. Livefreechallenge.org.
You can also sign up right there on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Yeah. Voice is still kind of broken up.
Sorry,
about the game last night.
Just yelling at the TV.
Sure. No!
Another opportunity on our website is the Chuck Swindoll Study Bible. We're giving that away. How many do we have for the month?
We're giving one away each week.
One each week.
And this is brand new study Bible. You've probably been hearing Chuck talk about it on his daily messages. But it's a lifetime of insights from Chuck Swindoll, and of course, some not only practical wisdom but some humor as well. The Swindoll Study Bible, and we're giving away a copy each week. And so, simply signing up at myfaithradio.com, you can enter to win. So.
Myfaithradio.com, you'll see it on the right hand side.
All right. Well, hoping today is we're going to talk a little bit about leadership and how to lead when you're not in charge, and maybe you are in that category. I mean, probably most of us are, right? You're in a situation. I mean, everybody works for somebody, and maybe you think I could do more if I was in charge, or if I ran the world, that sort of thing. Well, we'll see what happens about that. And we'll get to that in a minute, but let's hear this first.
The stories of our lives are very important. Dan Ellender says people love to hear stories. And as a matter of fact, they love to tell them as well. Dan believes that each of our lives is a series of unfolding stories.
Stories are the way we think, the way we relate to the world, and the way we understand ourselves. And in one sense, storytelling is no more difficult than telling the truth about the nature of your own life.
Truth, of course, is the essential ingredient.
I believe everyone is a good storyteller if they tell the truth in a way in which they invite people to see not only brokenness, but the wonder of God's beauty. It's a compelling story.
That is a great reminder. For more about storytelling and sharing your faith, go to makingyourlifecount.com.
Well, speaking of stories, coming up in the later this hour, we're going to tell you a story, well, using an acronym for the word scene, or the scene, spelling out an acronym that will give you an idea of how young people particularly relate to the world around them. And also there's another acronym we're going to go through, EPIC. Scene and epic.
When you say scene, you're saying S-E-E-N, I assume.
So S-C-E-N-E.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, and I'll tip you off. It stands for speed, convenience, entertainment, nurture, and entitlement.
Okay.
We're talking about the Generation I-Y, how they see the world. And we're also going to talk about epic, how they live in an experiential world, participatory, image-rich, and connected. Talk about how do we connect with today's generation for future leaders. We're going to get to that with Tim Elmore coming up in about half an hour. But we're going to take a quick break right now and get to today's guest. Or we're looking to make the connection, and hopefully that'll be coming soon. Stand by. Are you a leader? Well, we all have influence, right? How do we leverage influence so when we lack authority? That's the subtitle of a new book from Clay Scroggins called How to Lead When You're Not in Charge. And many can relate to that title, and maybe you're dealing with just some issues today about that, so I'm looking forward to the conversation. Clay is lead pastor at North Point Community Church, which provides visionary and directional leadership for all the local church staff and congregation. So Clay leads the main church there of North Point Ministries, which of course is pastored by Andy Stanley, and he started out as a facilities intern. Wow, that some of us have probably been there as well. Well, Clay, we're looking forward to the conversation, but welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks for coming on.
No, thanks, Neil. So glad to be with you guys, and so sorry about that loss yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, being an Atlanta fan, you know, it's tough to get through Philadelphia, apparently.
Yeah, and we know after last year's Super Bowl, we know what heartbreak feels like. I can promise you that.
Yes. So we may just, you know, if we exhaust all the leadership conversation, we can talk about football, and it will be perhaps healing for all of us. Maybe not. I don't know. You know, I do want, just by way of introduction, I know, I mean, one of the podcasts that my wife and I listen to with regularity is Andy Stanley's teaching, and try and actually, you know, listen in regularly each weekend. But, you know, you're the toughest instrument to play is second fiddle, and that's the part in the orchestra you're playing, right?
Yeah, that's true. We really operate like a franchise model. And so Andy kind of leads all of our, we've got six Atlanta area churches, and I lead our location that is our original location, but we honestly kind of operate like just one of the other six churches. So, I don't know, to say I'm second fiddle, I am definitely second fiddle, but there are five other second fiddles as well. Our other campus pastors operate in a very similar role that I operate in.
It's really become before we get into it, it's become a pretty strategic new model, the way of doing church, isn't it? I mean, the church I attend is doing the same thing here, multi-site.
Yeah, I mean, multi-site, the growth of the multi-site model in church world is significant. And honestly, the lessons I feel like that I have learned in leadership, I don't know that I would have learned them in the same way had I been at a more traditional one location church. But I do think the nuance of at the location I am in, I am the leader. I have the most authority, But in our organization, I've got multiple bosses and loads of people that have authority over me. And so it is a little bit of a nuanced dance of, am I in charge or are other people in charge? And I think a lot of people can relate to that. I mean, it's similar to a teacher at a school. You know, he or she is in charge of the classroom, but there's multiple bosses still that they've got, or a coach of a team. You know, you're in charge of that team, but you've got the athletic director that's really in charge, maybe, or, you know, loads of other examples. So everybody knows, I guess, similar to you, maybe a radio station, somebody might be the general manager, but there might be an owner of the whole station, maybe. Or,
sure.
Anyway, everybody knows that tricky challenge of, what do I do when I have a responsibility that I've been given, but I don't have all of the authority that I need? And I think multi-site church has definitely helped me learn that.
Well, I said, one of the quotes you talk about, you know, life teaches us that the authority to lead and the opportunity to lead are a package deal. We think when we're given the authority to lead, a title, a uniform, a corner office, then and only then will we have the opportunity to lead. That's just not true, is it?
Yeah, I think that's been part of this journey for me, is understanding there is a myth in leadership that you've got to be in charge in order to lead, that you have to be the one with the most authority in order to influence other people. And that's just clearly, you know, when we step back and think about it, we realize it's not true, because we know of people throughout history that have done amazing things and they didn't have the title. Anyone who's led really any civil rights movement, whether it's Dr. Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela or even Mahatma Gandhi in India, none of them had the title, yet they were able to lead people, able to influence people to move and make something better. And so when we step back and realize that, I think it's a little more obvious that, yeah, okay, well, you don't have to have the title in order to influence people, but we just so naturally lump authority and leadership together that when I'm in charge, then I'll be able to lead. And until I'm in charge, I'm just waiting to lead. And that's just not true.
In fact, you talk about sort of the not in charge as an excuse. I mean, if we use that as an excuse, how does it exhibit itself in our lives and work?
Well, I think I see it as a kind of a spectrum, and I see two extremes. On one end, and this is probably where I've been most naturally, is I felt like, okay, when I found myself using that as an excuse, I leaned toward passivity. I became a victim. Oh, well, the organization's too big, or my boss isn't paying attention, or I have too many bosses, or they didn't invite me to the meeting, therefore I'm just going to sit back and wait and see how this goes. And I think that's natural, that a lot of people lean toward passivity, and maybe there's somebody listening today that feels like they've given up, or they've just kind of resigned, that they're still working in the role, but they've resigned to not having any influence or to not feeling like they can lead anything. And I think that's one way that people use it as an excuse. And then the other way is there's more of a maybe overly ambitious or too ambitious. I've got to be out on my own. I can't work for anyone else. I can only lead my own thing. I think that is also a manifestation of using authority or the lack of authority as an excuse. So I really think people can lean one of two ways. They can either go super passive or overly aggressive and feel like they've got to be the ultimate authority in order to have any influence. But the truth is, I think Jesus really tried, it seems like Jesus gives us this middle way. Hey, there is a way that in the position you're in today that you can have influence and you can lead even if you don't have all the authority that you think you need.
A sentence caught my attention. You talked about it. It said, waiting for authority eroded the gift of leadership inside you. And I thought, you know, that's a good phrase. Just say a bit more about that. That, you know, that we think, well, we're gifted. God has, you know, gifted us. We have natural talents. But erosion does take place.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the, you know, when I started thinking about, you know, when this hit me, you know, and all of us, you know, this is tough for me a little bit, Neil, because I wrote this book on leadership. I don't consider myself a leadership expert. I don't, it was actually I was quite timid through this process because I felt like, who am I to write a book on leadership? But honestly, I had to move past that and go, you know what, my responsibility as a human, as a follower of Jesus, as a pastor, my responsibility is not to give everyone everything they need. I can't even do that, but my responsibility is to pour out my cup. And so that's really what this book is. It's really just me saying, hey, here's my leadership journey. This is where I've been. And I think as I look back, when it started to hit me, when it started to dawn on me, oh no, I'm believing a lie. I'm believing a myth about leadership that says I've got to be in charge in order to lead. When I started realizing that, I started looking back over my past, and what I saw was missed opportunity or a loss of influence or an erosion of the very gift that was inside of me. Because all of us, no matter who we are, no matter how talented we think we are or how gifted we think we are, all of us have been given a measure of influence. And even if you're an intern today, or if you're a middle-level manager, or if you're a senior vice president, you've been given a measure of influence, and you've been given a measure of talent, a measure of giftedness. And when we sit back in either in passivity or when we are overly aggressive, thinking we have to be in charge in order to lead, I think just like you said it, I think there is an erosion. We actually lose the very thing that we have. We become a smaller person. We become less of a leader. We don't become more of a leader. We become less of a leader, and we actually diminish the very thing that's inside of us. And that's a tough pill to swallow, but that's what I see when I look back over my past. And I didn't waste the last decade of my life. I don't actually believe that, but I do feel like that if I could do it over again, I would do it over again. I would go say, hey, no, I would tell myself 10 years ago, I would say, hey, step out there, risk yourself, give it a shot, use the influence that you have, but don't sit back and waste it. Now, of course, people can do that in a way that damages others, but there's also a way that you can do it that encourages others and builds others up and also creates change and creates progress and ultimately allows you to leverage the influence that you've been given.
You start out early in the book, one of the first chapters is on identity. I thought it was interesting to start there when you think about, you know, leadership. Maybe, I guess we all want to jump to maybe strategies or so, but you start with identity. Yeah. Say more about that.
That's a great way to say it, Neil, that's exactly what I had done. I had this strategy in my own life, but as I began writing, I started thinking, you know what? There is no manual for leadership. You can't give someone a playbook and say, go do these things and you'll become a leader. That's not the way it works, because life doesn't have a manual. Life doesn't have a playbook. Every situation is different. Every opportunity is unique. And so because of that, leadership is way more about the leader than it is about the strategy of leadership. And ultimately, identity is, it's how we see ourselves. It's who we believe that we are. And you can't, I don't believe that you can lead in the best sense that you've been given to lead until you have a firm grasp of who you are. And that really is what identity is all about. Identity is a tricky, tricky thing. It's kind of like Jell-O a little bit. It would be tough to nail to the wall. It's kind of squishy. It's hard to understand in a way, but I think we all know how we see ourselves, and we all know how we think other people see us, and that may or may not be accurate. And identity, I think finding our truest sense of identity is learning to elevate God's voice above every other voice that we hear. The thing that's fascinating to me about identity is, I think in 2015, maybe, it was the, I think dictionary.com named it Word of the Year, which is fascinating to me, that it is definitely front and center in our culture right now. And I think there's a reason why. I think because every one of us is on a journey trying to figure out who we are. And identity can't be something we just define on our own. It's got to be something that's ascribed to us. I can't just determine who I am today, even though our self-individualistic, self-determined culture wants to convince us that we can decide who we are today. But the truth is, identity, there's an element of identity that has to come from someone else. Someone has to say, this is who you are. And I don't believe anyone has enough value, has enough giftedness, has enough excellence to be able to ascribe identity to us other than our Father in heaven, which I think is why even Jesus, at the very beginning of his life and ministry, one of the first things that happens is God says, "This is my son in whom I'm well pleased." He begins by ascribing his own son identity. And I think the same is true for you and for me, that our best identity is when we're living out of who God has ascribed us to be, who he has, what he has said about us. Now, that doesn't mean we don't listen to the voice of our spouse or the voice of our kids or the voice of our parents or the voice of our boss or our friends. Those voices are important as well, but we've got to learn to elevate God's voice above all those other voices. And, you know, I think if we can do that, all the leadership stuff falls into place. I think when we become better humans, we become better leaders. When we become better followers of Jesus, we become better leaders of other people. I think it's just the way God has orchestrated life to work.
Talking with Clay Scroggins about his new book, How to Lead When You're Not in Charge, Leveraging Influence When You Lack Authority. Clay, we've got a couple minutes before the break, and maybe we can start on this, because one of the key areas you discuss as well is talking about desire and ambition. I'm wondering, can you explain maybe the difference between them and if there are pluses and minuses with ambition?
Yeah, I think ambition is a tricky concept for Christian people. It was a tricky concept for me growing up in the church. It's a tricky concept for me as a pastor, because it doesn't feel, I think there's so much of us that feels like, I'm not supposed to have ambition. And so often throughout, definitely the writings of the authors of the New Testament, they warn us about selfish ambition. And I do think ambition is a tricky thing, but the flip side of it is that I know I want to lead more. I want to have influence. I want to make progress. I want to create something great. And so it was really, that chapter is really just me trying to reconcile these two things inside of me that feel like they're warring at times. Is it okay for me to want to lead? And I think what I have learned is that desire to lead others, that desire to have an influence, that desire to make something great in this world, to benefit other people and to bring God honor and glory, that's God-given. That's a whisper from heaven. That's a fingerprint of God that's inside of us. And I think as we learn how to lead when we're not in charge, as we learn how to lead without authority, I think we are awakening, or we're channeling or harnessing the very thing that God put in us, which is to use this life to try to make someone else's world a better place.
Good word today from Clay Scroggins. Clay is the lead pastor at North Point Community Church. Their primary campus, or a multi-site church, of course, in the suburban Atlanta, all around Atlanta, and pastored by Andy Stanley. And Clay has written a great book called How to Lead When You're Not in Charge, Levering Influence When You Lack Authority. And we do have some copies to give away. I think three copies to give away. This would be a great resource to help you as you understand more about, you know, how God has gifted you and how you can make your world a better place. You can call to be part of the drawing at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We'll do a drawing at the top of the hour and get a copy of How to Lead When You're Not in Charge. And if you have a question, you can join in as well. We've got another 15 minutes to go with Clay. And coming up, we're going to talk about a Greek word that sounds like kibosh, as in, you know, stomp our dreams and ideas. More on that in a couple minutes. Maybe you're letting your lack of authority paralyze you. It's a myth of leadership that you have to be in charge in order to lead. Great leaders don't buy it. Clay Scroggins has written about, experienced it in his own journey. He started out as a facilities intern, worked his way through many organizational levels in North Point Ministries, and now is the lead pastor for the main campus church, North Point Community Church, pastored by Andy Stanley. He holds a degree in industrial engineering from Georgia Tech. And, you know, we're not going to talk about, you know, playing the Philadelphia Eagles, because that's just too painful. So, or Super Bowl, we're not bringing that up at all either. But we are going to talk a little Greek, because, of course, we love Greek words. And you do a little word study on a Greek word that sounds like kibosh. Say more about that.
Yeah, actually a Hebrew word from
Hebrew,
Genesis. Yeah, that's all right. In Genesis, very beginning, God gives, you know, he gives us this mandate for life, says, hey, be fruitful and multiply. That's the first big command that he gives. And then the second one is he says, go and subdue the earth. And I was trying to get in touch with, I was trying to find the origin of that desire in all of us to go and make something, to create something, to bring some order to something, to make something grow, or create something that's going to make life better. I think that's in all of us. And I started looking at that command that he gave us, go and subdue the earth. And as I was looking at the original language there, the word looks like the word kibosh, which, as you stated before the break, we know that word commonly in phrases such as, I'm going to put the kibosh on somebody's dreams, or I'm going to put the kibosh on what's happening in that department, or I'm going to put the kibosh on your idea. And the more I started wrestling with that, the more I started realizing, I think that perversion of what God originally put in us is another example of authority-based leadership. You know, in Mark 10, Jesus' disciples are walking down the road, Mark tells us, and John and Peter and James are having this conversation about who was going to get to sit at his right hand, and they were arguing over who was going to be the greatest. And Jesus did not condemn them for wanting to be great. He reframed greatness, and he said, hey, if you want to lead, if you have ambition to go and create something better, he didn't condemn that, because I think that's God's fingerprint in us. That's the kibosh that was originally put in us. But he reframes it and says, here's how to do it. He says, don't be like the Gentiles. He said, don't be like the rulers of the Gentiles who lord their authority over others. And he kind of lays out what we would describe as kibosh type leadership, you know, authority based. I'm going to keep you under my thumb. I'm waiting to get in charge. Then I'm going to lead. And once I get in charge, I'm not going to relinquish my power for any other reason other than my own benefit. And Jesus says, not so with you. He says, go be different, go serve. And he said, you know, maybe the hinge point of Mark's gospel there, Mark 10:42, he says, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. And so he kind of gives us this new way of leading, or really he's tapping into the original form of leadership that God gave us to subdue the earth, to go create something great with the elements that we've been given. And that's what leadership ultimately is. It's the ability to take what's been given to me and create something with it, which part of what's been given to me is a boss, multiple bosses, and some coworkers, and a budget, big or small, and some resources, and this opportunity. And now it's my opportunity to go create an oasis of excellence with what I've been given. And that's an opportunity that every single one of us has today, whether we realize it or not. And that's ultimately what influence is. It's the opportunity to create an oasis of excellence right where you are, whether you're an intern or whether you're the senior leader of the entire organization.
Well, let that be a good visual for us today, to create an oasis of influence. It's a good word from Clay Scroggins, how to lead when you're not in charge. By the way, we've got some copies of his book to give away. You can sign up to be part of the drawing at 877-93-FAITH. You know, it's one of the challenges we're living in this season, and maybe it's always been the case, but there's certainly a plenty of criticism going around. And make a distinction between critical thinking and being a critic, because that is always surrounding the areas of leadership, it seems like.
Well, why this was so important for me is I started thinking through, okay, if it is my responsibility to cultivate influence, I've got to figure out how to do that in the position that I'm in. And so I started with these four behaviors. Certainly there are hundreds of behaviors that any one of us could go and change or go and do today that would bring us more influence, that would cultivate or grow more influence for us. But I've tried to focus on these four, and that's really the meat of the book, are these four behaviors. And the third one is around learning to think critically, learning the skill of bringing value to whatever I've been assigned today, which that's not easy to do. It's not easy to see what's in front of me and to figure out how to make it better. especially for those people that have grown too passive and have become a victim to the organizational structure that they're in. But critical thinking is a skill that all of us can get better in. The danger, though, is that we become critical. And that distinction is so important to me because being critical robs us of influence, whereas critical thinking grows our influence. And so much hangs in the balance there between the two. And learning how to become someone who is skilled at thinking critically without becoming critical of other people is so important. And the more audiences that I have spoken in front of with this message, the more I have realized that I think the razor thin line between thinking critically and being critical really hangs on motive. It hangs on what do I want for other people. That when I'm looking at somebody else's department, or if I'm looking at somebody else's team, or I'm looking at another company or another organization or another church, am I wanting good things for them, or am I wanting bad things for them? Am I wishing goodwill on them, or am I just trying to point out what's wrong? And at the root of criticism is I'm trying to tear something down for the benefit of my own, to build myself up. But learning to think critically is I might see something that needs to change, but I'm wanting to change it because I think it will make you better. I think it will help your world. I think it'll bring you more excitement, more joy, more contentment in life. And I think that is the essence of learning to think critically, is how am I bringing value to somebody else's world? And that's not easy to do, especially when we work for a boss that we're frustrated with or mad at or feels like is not giving us all the opportunity that we think we deserve or think we need. But the more I can learn to bring value in the situation that I'm in without becoming critical, I think the more influence that I can cultivate in the position that I'm in today.
There's a lot of people that are in situations where, the company wants to buy in, but they'd like to weigh in. You addressed that as well. If we're not part of the decision, do we still support and implement?
Yeah, I love, there's a quote that I reference from he's kind of a leadership guru. His name is Patrick Lencioni. He's written 5 Dysfunctions of a Team and a number of other great leadership books. In his latest book called The Advantage, he's got a quote. He says, hey, if you want to get people to buy in, you've got to give them the opportunity to weigh in. And I think that's absolutely true, that if you want people to buy into the situation, you got to allow them to speak into it, give them a voice. The problem is that I wrestled with as I read through that is I thought, well, that's great and that's absolutely true. But every single day I'm being handed decisions that someone else made and I didn't get to weigh in. But I'm being asked not only to buy in, I'm being asked to execute these decisions, to lead these decisions. You know, this is where earlier, Neil, when we talked about the multi-site church, this is where I feel like some of these leadership lessons were painfully evident to me, but I lead our location. I lead our local church. And most of the decisions around how we do programming and how we plan for what we're going to work on or what's going to happen on the weekend or what we're going to do in different ministry areas, so much of that is handed to us. So much of that are things that were decided by someone else, but our role at a local church is to execute those plans, is to implement those plans. And that sometimes is really difficult to do because it's very easy to go, hey, well, I didn't make that decision and I might not like the decision. And so I'm just going to sit back and we'll see how this decision goes. And we don't lean in as much as we can because we weren't allowed to weigh in. And leadership without authority is learning how to move beyond that. It's learning how to go, you know what? I might not have gotten to weigh in on that, but more than making the right decision, I've got to learn how to own the decision and make it right. Because any decision can work if we can get everybody to buy in and lean into the same decision. I've noticed that in great companies. Great companies are great usually because they've got everybody moving in the same direction. It might not be the absolute best decision, but everybody's leaning into the same decision. And that's a powerful form of leadership, but it's my decision. It's my responsibility that I've got to choose today. Am I going to have the right kind of attitude about a decision that I didn't get to weigh in on? And I think as followers of Jesus, it's not just an option. It really is something that we're required to do because God has put us in the position that we're in for a reason. And we've got an opportunity today to choose to be positive about what it is that he's put in front of us.
I only got a minute left, but I was just thinking about, you know, Bill Hybels every year at the Leadership Summit. He says, everybody wins when a leader gets better. And that's really true, isn't it?
I mean, that's
what we're talking about today, right? That we're going to make something better, make something great.
That's great. Absolutely.
Clay, great to have you on. Blessings to you in the whole North Point team. And I encourage people to, you know, if they're looking for a good podcast, to check out, North Point Online. It's live every Sunday morning, and check that out as well. And pick up a copy of Clay's book, How to Lead When You're Not in Charge, Leveraging Influence When You Lack Authority. We got some copies to give away. We'll do that drawing here at the top of the hour. So call 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Clay Scroggins is lead pastor of North Point Community Church in Atlanta, joining us today. Clay, blessings to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you, Neil. Blessings to you as well.
Stay tuned. Connecting Faith continues in a moment as we talk about the future leaders and how do we help young leaders develop. A few years ago, I was actually watching North Point's message, and Clay Scroggins was interviewing Dr. Tim Elmore, who is in the Atlanta area as well, and he is president of Growing Leaders. And I was just fascinated by what Tim had to share, and so as a result, got him on the phone, and we had a great conversation a while back about his book, Generation IY, Our Last Chance to Save Their Future. And Tim works with schools and universities helping to train future leaders. And I thought you would enjoy just hearing the portion of the conversation we had with him. We're going to talk about a couple of acronyms, starting with SEEN.
You use the acronym SEEN from time to time, S-C-E-N-E. Yeah. Talk about that acronym and the implications of it.
Yeah, this has probably been what we've heard to be one of the most helpful little handles for parents and teachers and coaches as they work with the next generation. Listeners, if you'll picture in your mind the word SEEN, S-C-E-N-E, I'm going to give you two columns that you can just mentally write down. On the left-hand column, I'm going to give you five words that spell the word SEEN, S-C-E-N-E. But then on the right-hand column, I'm going to give you the unintended consequences of those realities, what we didn't see coming. So the letter S, Neil, in the word SEEN reminds us we live in a world of speed. Nobody would argue. We want things faster. We want high-speed internet access. We want ATMs. We want fast food. We want microwave ovens. And so if a kid today is growing up in a world of speed, it's very easy to assume that slow is bad. I can't even navigate slow. I don't like slow. The letter C in SEEN, we live in a world of convenience. And I would think we all love the modern-day conveniences we enjoy. But if I grew up in a world of convenience, it's very easy to assume that hard is bad. The number one phrase that K-12 educators say that they hear from students today is, this is too hard. They actually tell their teacher, this is too hard. So the letter E in SEEN, we live in a world of entertainment. And now it's in our hands. You know, we've got a portable device. We want stimuli coming at it. But if I grew up in a world of entertainment, boring is bad. Now, I would argue that teenagers have never, ever liked boring. But today, it's even different. Neuroscientists are telling us today that it's in times of boredom, when we actually have margin in our calendars, that we develop creativity and empathy, which I believe are two extremely valuable qualities to embrace. But you live in a world that's just screaming noise at you all the time. You're maybe not thinking about anybody else. You're just trying to survive the week yourself. The letter N in SEEN reminds me we live in a world of nurture. Now, certainly not every kid in America, but middle-class America and certainly affluent America, we've nurtured them, safety-obsessed, helmets on them whenever they're doing anything, pads, you know, safety policies. We're very safety-obsessed. We are nurturing them like never before. But if I grew up in a world of nurture, I can easily assume that risk is bad. And again, our whole nation was built on risk, not reckless, but calculated risk. And this population of university students today are the most risk-averse today. They want to be entrepreneurs, but we've not taught them to take risks. And then finally, the last letter, E in seeing, certainly not every person in America, but we live in a world of entitlement. We feel entitled to things. I because I'm here, it's mine, it should be mine. And if I grew up in a world of entitlement, it's far too easy to assume that labor is bad. I shouldn't have to work for this. Now, I know that's oversimplified, but every time I have taught this to groups of teachers or parents or coaches or even employers, most people are nodding, saying, yeah, that's our world. In fact, we're affected, aren't we, as adults? I feel more entitled today than ever. But for the kids, they're so moldable. So if you'll think about that right-hand column that I just gave you for your mind to list, the one that says slow, hard, boring, risk, and labor, it dawned on me, Neil, as I first listed this out, aren't those the very qualities that grow me into a good adult, into a good husband, into a good father, into a good leader, a good worker? So all I'm simply saying is I love 21st century living, but we're living in a culture right now that strips away the very elements that would naturally build life skills in me. And all I'm saying to that is not that, you know, woe is me. It's just we have to be more intentional, way more intentional as parents perhaps than we needed to be 30 or 40 years ago. So I'll stop there.
Well, Tim, I'm just wondering, you talk about these are the steps needed to grow into a good adult, but it seems like there's also on the right side of that column the steps needed to grow into a mature Christian as well. How does living out our faith play into this scenario?
No doubt about it. Well, if you read even a cursory read of the New Testament, you see the virtues and values that Christ taught and the apostles taught. It's when things are, you know, you delay gratification and you, I mean, the, you know, patience and love and kindness and self-control, those only come when they're tested, not when you watch a video on them. So I think that's one of the big mistakes I think we made in the American church is we think knowing something up here in our heads equates to mastering it. You know, I got the CD series on that sermon, you know, or whatever, and that's not it at all. So the New Testament Greek talks about gnosko and epigenosko. One is to know, like as a list of facts in your head, but epigenosko is to know through experience. So we're not just supposed to know about God, gnosko, like where we get our word Gnostic. We have to experience him. I don't just know my wife, I experience my wife. So that's where I think we've fallen off the path, perhaps, is just equating, I have mentally ascended to these truths, and now I'm a good Christian. And again, I think everybody, if we're honest, would say, I'm not a good Christian. I'm not patient at all by learning about patience. I have to endure. So yes, you're right. That right-hand column has everything to do with spiritual muscles atrophying if we don't test them out.
Tim, you talked about, you know, teaching these timeless truths in a timely way, and I'll use acronym, EPIC. Maybe we can use that just as a way to give us some tangibles on how we can more effectively share these important truths.
Absolutely. Well, futurist Dr. Leonard Sweet is the first person I ever heard address this topic, but he called young people today an EPIC generation. And I don't think he said that just because they love the word EPIC, although they love the word EPIC. We say it now because the letters EPIC aptly describe who they are and how they learn. So the letter E in EPIC reminds me these kids are experiential, more so than ever. If you think about the world they grew up in, Neil, everything was an experience. In fact, you can't go to a fast food restaurant without a Playland experience. You know, it's not just a cheeseburger, it's a slide, you know. You go to a children's museum, and it's not just look at the painting, it's lick it, sniff it, touch it, taste it. It's like a germ fest in there of experiences. So I often say to adults, how can we create experiences or environments from which we have a discussion? But we don't start with a lecture on people skills or whatever. We create an experience. You know, kids engage better after an experience when they've got something to talk about, not just theories. So that's the letter E. The letter P reminds me they're participatory. Now, this is slightly different than experiential. this just implies that kids today have grown up in a world where they have been able to weigh in on almost every issue from an early age. They are weighing in on where the family goes on vacation when they're 5 years old. They're weighing in on where the, you know, what the school's doing. And we've asked their opinion. We've asked them to vote. We've asked them to tell us what they think. So oftentimes kids get into a situation where we're trying to just download our thoughts, and they're going, how come I don't get to have a say? And oftentimes we want to say, well, because I'm the coach, that's why. But is there a way that we could give them a greater sense of ownership by giving them a piece of where this is going, by letting them feel like it's different now because they're in it than it was perhaps 2 years ago when they weren't in it? My premise on this one, Neil, is kids support what they help create. Students support what they help create. So we would let our kids weigh in on the vacation. We'd let them weigh in on what they were learning. Sometimes I would, from time to time, I'd have them watch a news broadcast on TV at night, and they would choose a story that they were interested in, and that I'd have them write out, if I was in charge of that problem, what would I do? If I was a leader, what would I do? And by the way, you probably noticed that 30-minute news broadcast is 25 minutes of bad news. You know, there's a plethora of awful things going on in the world. So what if you led that? What if you were doing that? So that engages in there. The letter I in EPIC reminds me they're image rich. I already called these teenagers screenagers today. So they've grown up with images, videos, DVDs, Instagram, more than Facebook even. So how can we provide an image or a metaphor that anchors the big idea that we're trying to get across? Where, yeah, we may want to talk about a lot of different things that are important, but here's the big idea and here's an image. Neil, we even created something called Habitudes. Habitudes are simply images that form leadership habits and attitudes. It's a way of learning a timeless truth through the power of a picture. Rivers and floods is all about focus. If you stop and think about it, floods are very unfocused water. Rivers are very focused water. They're flowing in one direction. But it's so much easier to begin to talk about rivers and floods and all the ramifications about that water than it is just to say, now, you need to be focused here, you know? So, again, I think the use of images is so huge when connecting to this emerging generation. And then the letter C in EPIC, the last one, reminds me this generation is connected. And they're connected both technologically as well as socially. So if you've got multiple kids in your home, let's say you have three kids, what if you turn them loose together on a very well-crafted question or problem, one that cannot be answered easily or with a yes or no answer, and you let them debate it, you let them talk about it. Now, will it be messy? Absolutely. Will there be arguing? Probably, yeah. But we have just found that very often if you let them connect with each other and they start policing each other's dumb thoughts or whatever, they will often come up with some of the most innovative solutions and answers. Every time I actually have taught Habitudes, I've learned something from the kids that I've taught them to because they're thinking outside the box, using the right hemisphere of their brain, not just the left hemisphere. And so I guess I'll wrap up this little portion by saying, how epic are you, listeners, as you lead your young people? I believe the more epic you are, the more experiential, participatory, image-rich, and connected, the better chance you have of really, really leading them well and connecting with them well. And then you can share a timeless what with a very timeless how.
Dr. Tim Elmore is president of Growing Leaders, and he's written some great resources. You want to hear that full interview, as well as my earlier conversation with Clay Scroggins on how to lead when you're not in charge. We'll post that on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. So check that out, myfaithradio.com, and check for how to lead when you're not in charge. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about ending abortion with Brian Fisher. Join us then. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.